to Christ the Center, your weekly conversation of Reformed theology. My name is Camden Busey. I believe this is episode 803. I recorded two episodes of Van Til Group, and so that's been throwing my count off. But I've numbered this one 803. I'll find out when I publish this whether I'm wrong or not. So don't write in if this is incorrect. I'm back in Libertyville, Illinois. I was down at Mid-America Reformed Seminary for a few days for their graduation and a board meeting, but I'm happy to be back in the office today, and I have with me Jim Cassidy, who serves as the pastor of South Austin OPC in South Austin, Texas. Welcome back, Jim. It's great to see you today.
As always, Camden, good to be here.
Yeah, we've got a double dose of Jim this week. We had our own Reform Forum board meeting, what was it, Tuesday night, so that was fruitful. It's great to have you back.
That's way too much Jim, by the way.
Too much. Jim. And then you're coming in 2 weeks or so to teach the other half of a series on John. And you selected that week because the Mets are in town.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm as excited about seeing this game as I was at the beginning of the season.
Well, me neither, because the Cubs have cooled off a bit too. But anyway, before we get into more of the sports talk, let's welcome our other guest, and this is going to be a bit of an interesting episode. We might even welcome more people. It's kind of Reform Forum happy hour. We're recording this on a Friday afternoon, and I just sent out a blast, but I specifically targeted our next guest. We're welcoming Brad Isbell. Many of you may know him as Chortles Weekly, and of course, he is one of the co-hosts and the audio tech guy also for one of your favorite podcasts, as they say, the oldest, biggest, and best, I think, Reformed Presbyterian podcast, PresbyCast. You got to check that out. Welcome, Brad. It's good to see you today.
You do have the very accurate qualifier that we're the oldest and largest Reformed podcast. Do live chicken sandwich reviews online. Although you've done hot sauce. So
we did. We haven't done reviews. I'm one of those. I'm usually not weirded out by too many of these particular things. Some people might beg to differ, but yeah, the first episode where you were reviewing chicken sandwiches, I'm one of those chewing on mics people that just can't, it's whatever gene I have that just taps into a gene and drives me batty.
Well, amazingly, that was the first episode that our now associate pastor's wife ever heard.
Oh,
and she's now one half of the Presby girl.
I know.
Sure. Truly our secret weapon, and we didn't quite scare her off and ruin all future relationship with her, so we're very thankful for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're very thankful for her service as well. Sarah Morris, wife of Sean Morris, is your associate pastor now down there in Tennessee. You got some recent episodes, at least as far as we're recording today. I believe the most recent episode in your feed is with the Presby girls, and you're welcoming Rosario Butterfield back. And also Sean Morris has recently taught a lesson on Machen that you've been putting those in the feed, and I've been listening to those. Those have been tremendous. Thanks for doing that, Brad.
Yeah, we've got a 6-part Machen series at my church, Covenant PCA in Oak Ridge. We did about a 6 or 7 or 8 lesson series back in 2009 or 10 to mark the 100th anniversary of Christianity and Liberalism. Senior pastor Nick Wilborn, who's been on your show, he did 2 weeks on the context. Sean will do a second week on, a biography. And then I'll talk about the book, but necessarily we're all talking about the book.
Of course.
We're that part of the PCA that loves Machen.
That's great. To make this about us, as Daryl always says, it's all about me. Not me, but, you know, his joke, Daryl Hart, that is. We recently just published the latest issue of the Reform Forum magazine. It's a little glorified newsletter. This one's 12 pages, and that has now been sent out to mailboxes. So if you have subscribed to that, it's free to U.S. addresses. We have an article in there. It's all devoted to Machen. But one of the articles in there is written by Carlton Wynn, and he specifically writes an essay, a little article on Machen's usefulness, effectiveness, and influence upon the PCA. So it's a really tremendous piece, and if you haven't seen that yet, you check out your mailboxes. If you haven't subscribed and we're not mailing them to you, then sign up at reformedforum.org/newsletter. And you'll get immediately a download link to download the PDF of that issue for free. And you can read it that way. Write in if you need any help at mail@reformedforum.org. I don't expect that you have, Brad, but have you seen it yet?
I have not. I look forward to it. And let me jump in here because that's very interesting that Carlton Wynn is writing on Machen and the PCA.
Exactly.
Very little has been written about Machen's effect on the Southern Church. And we know he was raised in the Southern Church, and that he was offered the presidency of one or two Southern seminaries, mm-hmm. one seminary at least. Faculty place. He was offered the presidency of Bryan College, which is south of here at Dayton. That would have been very interesting indeed. But I know there are a lot of academics who listen to this program. There are dissertations and theses waiting to be written on Machen's effect on other denominations, Southern Church. That's just an unexamined field, I think.
I think so, too. That was why Carlton and I were batting ideas around, and I pitched him that one, if I have my memories correct. And I'm glad he wrote it. It's short. It wasn't meant to be a long, lengthy treatment, so it's not an academic, something for an academic journal, but there's so much material there that needs to be expanded. There's also all sorts of interesting questions just thinking about what was going on in the PCUS in the 1920s and 30s, and when the Presbyterian Church Covenant Union was formed, which is kind of an affinity / renewal group within the Northern Church that Machen began, and then when they eventually spun off and formed the OPC, wasn't called that yet, but the Presbyterian Church of America. One of the questions is, why didn't they look into joining the PCUS, or did they? And not to get into that question today, and there are probably some good answers as to why that didn't happen. Nevertheless, it would be wonderful to have a dissertation or a book or even just a lengthy article or series of articles dealing with those subjects. So if we can put out the appeal, and then Brad, I don't know if your machine's working today, but we can blast that Machen horn and maybe somebody will pick up that mantle, that flag, and run with it. There it is. It's working. We couldn't get it going beforehand. Well done. Before we get continuing on this subject, I do want to welcome to the program. We have also Ryan Noah. Again, I said this is happy hour here at Reformed Forum on a Friday afternoon. And Ryan Noah, our Director of Education and Advancement, has popped in as well. He's all the way through the wall to my left in
That's
his
right.
office. But welcome back,
Ryan.
Not
in the studio today, but right next door.
Yeah, that's fun. Well,
I feel like I showed up late. I thought it was at 3, so I'm maybe a few minutes late, but happy to join the conversation. Can't wait for PCAGA in just a few weeks yet.
It's going to be a good time.
It'll probably be, 70 degrees and 30% humidity there in Memphis, so just bring your warm clothing.
I'm sure. I got it on all day, even in the summer.
He does. He's always, where he's wearing these puffy coats to the office, at least in the wintertime. Maybe my Dutch friends have been wearing off on me too much. We keep the office too cold or something. We got to get this HVAC straightened out because it's all working all weird. But that's apropos. You bring that up, Ryan. A lot of things going on here regarding Machen. We got the new issue of our magazine out there. On the back of that magazine, you'll find info on our conference. We've got our conference coming up October 6th and 7th. And head on over to reformedforum.org/conference for info on that. Just today, as we're recording, registration is now open and available. So I'm not going to talk a ton about that. We might come back around to that in the later part of this podcast, but check your email inboxes for details and information. However, I will at least mention the topic. We are talking about Machen's Christianity and Liberalism and its continuing influence. I'll be speaking there. Jim will be speaking there. Lane Tipton, of course, will be speaking there. But we also have Daryl G. Hart, who will be coming to speak and delivering a plenary address on that Saturday. So head on over to reformedforum.org/conference for info on that. We'd love to see you. Love to welcome you. But since Ryan brought it up and we have Brad with us to talk about the PCA General Assembly coming up here in a couple weeks in June, Ryan and I will be there exhibiting for Reformed Forum and reconnecting with many of our PCA friends. I think this will be my third year in a row attending. So where does that put me in terms of percentiles, Brad, relative to the average or to all PCA TEs? How many have gone 3 or 4 years in a row, you think? Lots?
Well, I think a lot.
90%? You think it's as high as 90?
Oh, no, 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 not at all. We have maybe 6,000 ministers.
Yeah.
And we only have...
Two-thirds? You think two-thirds have gone at least 3 years in a row? I think
no.
Probably. No? Okay. No,
more like a third.
Okay.
Because you know, we have about 25% ruling elders lately. And we'll have about 2,000. I did hear from someone who spoke to someone at headquarters, you know, Mothership in Atlanta. And, you know, we're going to be pushing that 2,000 number again this year. Not as big as last year.
Okay.
It was the biggest ever. But it'll be well attended. It's the 50th anniversary.
It's a big time.
Never had one of those before, so I don't know what that's going to be like.
Well, at our 50th anniversary, we decided not to join with you. So maybe.
Well.
we had the votes and all that sort of thing, but it was at the tail end of all of the denominational celebration. Now, previously, I should mention that we voted ourselves to merge with the RPCES in 1975, I believe, but the RPCES, in a surprise vote, did not obtain the necessary supermajority to receive us. Okay. So then later, the PCA, we had another follow-up joining and receiving, and the PCA voted to receive the RPCES, but to reject us. But then the third time it happened, we decided not to join with the PCA. But that is because I think there's a lot of reasons, maybe because of that. But one reason, of course, is we were at our all-time peak for, you know, denominational excitement and pride. So coming off the heels of actually at the 50th anniversary celebration, you know, to vote yourself out of existence while you're celebrating your 50 years. You know, you're not ceasing to exist entirely, but in the, as a distinct church, you know, it just wasn't enough to get that done.
It kind of would take away from the title of the 50th anniversary book, Pressing Toward the Mark, if all of a sudden you said, well, we're...
we got there.
We're done.
We made it.
The sociological point. But, right.
But we have ecumenical fellowship.
My feelings aren't hurt. My feelings aren't hurt. You know, there may be a few... whose feelings were hurt, but
well, on both sides.
Oh yeah.
You know, and there were quite a few that really wanted the merger and thought that would have been the best and most godly thing. And there were many churches that eventually realigned anyway. So yeah, I think in God's providence, it's all worked out. And I, for one, am very happy and thankful that we have distinct communions that are as related as possible. We have very tight ecumenical fellowship. We have a joint venture together with Great Commission's publications. A lot of ministers will move back and forth at various times, different calls. Tons of members will move back and forth as they move about into different cities and locales. But the best thing of all is we get to share fraternal and exchange fraternal delegates. Brad, you want to tell us the main attraction of the OPC General Assembly?
Well, that probably was probably the men's fashion show that would occur at some point.
Jorts?
Or the mustard solid color or dress shirts.
Yeah.
I jokingly say that, you know, if you look at the clothing that Dwight Schrute wears in the office, it's almost perfect OPC elder palette.
OPC ministers and beet farmers have a lot of sartorial features in common.
Yes, but we love you all. I was somehow elected to the Interchurch Relations Committee, which is one of our permanent committees. We have committees of commissioners that only exist while the assembly exists, and then we have some year-round committees. So I was elected to the Interchurch Relations Committee. Typically, stated clerk maybe a few others will go to assemblies as the fraternal delegates. I volunteered to go to to your assembly, be the fraternal delegate, and that worked out. So, Lord willing, I'll be there for the first 3 days or so of the assembly in Chicago. I've never been to Chicago, maybe the airport once, but we'll see. I know that's your stomping grounds.
Yeah, for better or for worse. Yeah. We love it here, but this is what I know, right? If you have like an abusive parent, like you need to get out of that and find some freedom and understand what good parents are. Maybe Chicago the Illinois has been a bit of that to you and me, Ryan, in terms of our taxes and all sorts of other things, political ideas and whatnot. We're not actually in Chicago city limits. Thankfully, we're not even in Cook County, which is pretty egregious. Nevertheless, we still get some of that spillover from what's going on down there. We'll be happy to have you. OPCGA is at Trinity Christian College in Palos Heights. I always get Palos Park and Palos Heights. I used to head into Palos Park sometimes back when I was in college to visit some folks. So we're looking forward to having you. Not too far from the campus of Mid-America Reform Seminary, where I do some work. Very thankful for that as well. Let me ask you an uncomfortable question, Brad. Like you said, you volunteered to come and speak at our OP General Assembly. Is this something people are really fighting to get selected for? Is this something where like you had to cast lots and you got stuck with a short straw?
You had to arm wrestle somebody for it.
Yeah, the loser had to go.
A lot of times we'll choose a minister in the area. To kind of save money, and that's a minister with a personal connection.
Sure.
My only personal connection is I just love Machen, and therefore I love the OPC.
Thank you.
And really coming to an OPC General Assembly, it's almost like a bucket list for me. And to be there on the 50th anniversary of the book, how could I pass that up?
I know.
So, I was very clever. I sent the made a clerk a message and I said, you got anybody in mind to go to the OPC General Assembly? He said, no. He said, no, how about you? I said, I'll take it. So,
I love it. I love it. Fortune favors the brave, right? Even though we're not pagans. We're thankful for that. We're looking forward to it. We'll try to show you a good time. We'll welcome you. I'll tell everyone to calm down and see if I can manage. No, we will welcome you with open arms. We really, truly have some of the best times in fellowship after hours and in the breaks with our fraternal delegates. And they come from all over the world. That is one of my favorite things about General Assembly, is getting to commune and fellowship with brothers from other denominations, like-minded denominations, but distinct denominations for various reasons. And that's part of our heritage in the OPC. Ned Stonehouse is a big part of that. But many others have contributed greatly to developing what I think is a good and proper reformed ecumenicity. That's important stuff. Brad, one thing I wanted to give you the opportunity to talk about, and I want to revisit. Last year, we had such an amazing time with More in the PCA, a wonderful organization that helps to sponsor people, ruling elders in particular, to go to PCA General Assembly. People may not know, but they're on the... They work differently, so churches have the ability to send a certain number of ruling elders to General Assembly, but every teaching elder can go, but people are on the hook to cover the costs themselves. Often the churches cover the costs of teaching elders. In the OPC, we have a commissioned assembly, so we have a specific number. So think of it more like the House of Representatives, that a certain number of people can go, ministers can go from each presbytery, depending on the size of the presbytery. So not everyone in the OPC, not every minister can go to General Assembly and have a vote as a commissioner. So it's very different, but that makes it more difficult sometimes for the PCA people to go because they can't afford it. Whereas the OPC, having only a certain amount of people to go, actually covers the cost of everyone to travel. My point being, could you give us an update? Because for the last 2 years at General Assembly, I've been able to attend. And then last year, Ryan and I were able to attend events in support, receptions for More in the PCA. And we just had the best time. I'd come down just for that. I truly would make the trip just to come visit with the More in the PCA folks.
Well, this year, our Wednesday night dinner, actually, one of my complaints with the PCA General Assembly is that we don't do that much business. Wednesday night, which is the second night of the assembly, we're off. So there's a big celebratory concert. Thank you. But we're having our More in the PCA event. It's at the world famous Rendezvous.
Yeah.
The Alley Rib Joint in Memphis. I mean, I grew up an hour from there, so I'm familiar with it. We're sold out, but I'm going to hold a ticket or two for you and Ryan if you can.
Well, thank you.
So Wednesday night, we'll take care of that. Now we will have about 250 people there. You know, as to the expense of the assembly, because of the size, we have to stay in these large convention hotels, which, you know what that costs.
Yeah.
Four nights is going to be $1,000 probably.
Easy.
If there's airfare involved, there's airfare involved, and the church or the individual is on the hook for that. And then the registration, historically, the last few years, has been $450 a head.
Yeah.
Unless you're from a very small church or you're retired.
That's $2,000.
I'm glad to say, yeah. Oh, yeah, 2,000 is just a good placeholder number. It can be a little less or quite a bit more. Every church can send two ruling elders. Now, so if you're a church of 50, if you have two ruling elders, they both can go. But all teaching elders, associate pastors, assistant pastors, RUF guys, seminary professors, anyone who's a member of a presbytery can go. We did a little tweak last year that I might have been involved in, and that was we added $50 to the price for teaching elder registration. So they pay $500 now, and we lowered the ruling elder price across the board to $300. So the way that works out, any church that sends their ruling elders is actually going to save money unless they send five pastors and two ruling elders. And then in that case, they've got plenty of money anyway. So it did get a little cheaper for ruling elders this year. We hadn't had a fee increase for a decade, so it was about time to adjust. I think you know, it's going to be an expensive year. You know, we have to worry about things now like security, and the price of everything is going up. So I think someone told me today that, you know, there's going to be an appeal for extra giving to help pay for the expense. It's just you know, we don't have a, you know, I think there's sort of a per capita kind of required asking of OPC churches, and you all use that for a relatively small delegated assembly.
Yeah.
We're meager
accommodations. We love them. We're happy for them, but we're not staying in hotels.
Yeah. Well, it's, and of course, you know, the ARP, they meet usually at their facility.
Von Clarken.
So it's sort of like camping and, I don't. We're you know, culturally a little different. We have a little genteel past, and we like our nice things. I'm not gonna complain about the accommodations in the dorm in Chicago.
We'll have a good time. We're looking forward to that. So how is more in the PCA been going? Give us, you know, a snapshot from 3 years ago till now. Seems as if you're making a lot of progress, that you're making, certainly having an effect on awareness of some of these issues, getting a lot more people involved. And I'm seeing, at least the last couple times I've been, ruling elders that have been ruling elders for some time but have never been to General Assembly, and they're there for the first time because you made that possible.
Well, we don't help a great number of people. I don't know, you know, dozen maybe.
Sure.
Not hundreds. But I think we have made it safe to talk about ruling elder issues. You know, we have the principle of the parity of the offices or the roles in our office.
Two and a halfness.
But I think we've encouraged more to come. We've emphasized the importance of it. I've written several things about ruling elders, which may or may not have helped. But the trend is a larger percentage of our assembly are ruling elders, and the ones who come really do participate. They add to debate. They're important on committees, and we've got some great ruling elders. But we have, you know, we raise a little money and we dispense it based on need. Small churches that just can't afford to send everyone that they would like to. So we've tried to be helpful, but we're not swinging any votes or getting hundreds of people there.
Sure.
Hopefully we've inspired more than we've helped.
Yeah. Well, I think that's definitely the case. And whether you're footing the bill for many or not, even the campaign and the awareness effectiveness is certainly there. It's making a difference. That's a good thing. And this isn't, you know, shouldn't be viewed as some sort of political or partisan thing. But if you have people that are in the church, the denomination, that are ordained for office, you'd want them exercising that office as much as possible. So getting people to the assembly is a wonderful thing. And talking about those issues, frankly, I think is quite helpful and useful as well. Jim, I take it that you've been aware a little bit about this. I know Ryan is because we've been to the events, but the dynamics are interesting. Jim, you got any thoughts or comments on this or ecumenicity?
Well, no, just to say I'm thrilled to hear that Brad is coming to the OPC GA. There have been years in the past where the representative from the PCA GA was kind of a strange fit for the OPC GA in the sense that it might be a well-known progressive within the denomination or something. And I think that Brad will be a really good fit, and I think we'll enjoy your fellowship. Looking forward to it. My ruling elder, John Terpstra, is on our ecumenical committee, and so he'll be present at the GA and be, you know, part of the hosts that will be there to accommodate you. And so looking forward to the opportunity for you guys to get together.
At least last year they hosted a little roundtable. It was a private roundtable for the fraternal delegates, where they just got together and got, you know, had to have dinner, and after dinner one night just were able to talk very openly and frankly about denominational relations. So you should get invited to that, Brad, if they host such a thing again.
That'd be good. I was a NAPARC delegate a couple of years ago, and that was sort of like a, you know, it was sort of resembled that. Mm-hmm. It was actually hosted by Shiloh OPC in Raleigh, so mm-hmm. it was fun. It's a great place. So I'd hang out with lots of people. And I have visited the Wilson at least once, and that was also interesting. So, yeah, we really are ecumenical in the confessional reform of the world, and I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, what do we got on tap, brothers? There's all sorts of things we could talk about, other things that are in the news. Brad, is there any... I know there have been developments. I don't want to dig up anything that might be frustrating for you, but what are some of the highlights or things that people might want to know about regarding the goings-on of the PCA? Any new overtures or overtures that are coming back, whether passed or failed? How does that all work?
Yeah, there aren't as many overtures as there were the last two assemblies. We all know that, I think it's fair to say that the driver for interest in the last 3-4 years has been the Side B revoice controversy. The prime actor in that, as far as the PCA is concerned, he and his church have left the PCA, but we still have overtures that have to do with identity language and requirements for office that are more or less tied to the whole Side B Christianity controversies. Some people think it's solved and it's over. Some people still want something more codified in the BCO than is already there, the church order. So I think I came up with this term last year. Because we had a set of overtures 2 years ago, and neither got that supermajority. You know, the thing to remember, the thing that makes Presbyterianism so frustrating sometimes is that supermajority requirement. It also keeps any one, you know, faction or side from just sort of running over, steamrolling the others, and it makes change slow. And we only had this year we had a couple of overtures that did get the supermajority, but they weren't as strong as some would have liked. And I assume they'll be approved fairly easily. The assembly, but there are more of those revoice Side B identity language overtures, and I dub them the do overtures because the first set failed, and then the one this year has passed. And but we keep going back to the well on that one. That frustrates some people, but some people think it's absolutely necessary. We also have the issue of a very interesting use of officer titles in the PCA. We don't have female deacons. Informally, people use the word deaconess. We had a study report to this effect several years ago. There are churches, you know, that are deemed to part of their contextualization seems to bump right up against or look like having female quasi-officers. So there's an overture that's sure to be notable and controversial about the use of titles of office. So I'm really looking forward to see what happens with that one. There's also a Rumble Petition overture, which is that Westminster,
right?
31 or 25. I can't remember, the fact that, we can't, we're not an established church. We don't intermeddle with political affairs, but we do have the right of humble petition in case of the extraordinary. And again, I don't remember if that's 29 or 31 or 25. I can't remember the chapter. You guys know it. It's easy enough to find.
Acts 29.
Okay.
Acts.
So there.
Acts 29.
Oh, yeah. That too. Yeah, I've heard about that. So on the issue of, it's fairly, it's focused. It's a humble petition to the federal government, but really implies, governors and all sorts of levels of government. We say that in this overture, if it were adopted, we would be saying, please stop funding or supporting any sort of gender change, drugs or procedures for minors, for people 18 and under. It's focused. It's in response to the transgender sexual confusion. Well, I think we can fairly call it a crisis in this country, and in this country more even than Europe. It's still weird that we seem to be leading in this bad thing. Some people are going to oppose it because they say, well, we failed to pass a similar thing about political violence last year. But I think the argument for this humble petition to the civil government is that this is a creation level life and death sort of thing. Male and female, created he them. And I know that the OPC has probably done similar things. We have on abortion, women in combat, just a few very basic, life or more creation level sexual issues. I think almost all the NAPAR denominations statement of some sort on women in combat or women in the military back in the 80s and 90s. Some of you guys remember that. We're not Christian nationalists who are trying to take over the government, but many feel that this is it's justified to speak on this issue and to do so reasonably, but pointedly and strongly. So I don't know what you all think about that, or
sure,
whether such a thing would happen in the OPC, but I think it has a good chance of passing, and that would only need a majority at the assembly.
I think there's would be a diversity of opinion on those things. I don't speak for other people, I speak for myself, but as far as I've been around and just ascertaining implicitly the general posture, we're fairly reticent as a denomination to make political statements or to appeal to the government. Certainly would most people, I imagine all of us, I hope, would share the same concerns regarding the ethics, but it can be a bit of a heated issue, I imagine, in most assemblies, most communions, in terms of how that works out with our relationship to the state. Jim, what do you think? You've been around longer than I have, but we very rarely, I can't think of an instance. I'm sure it's come up. I've been around when it's been debated, but just off the top of my head, and there's not much there, as you can see, there's not much inside it either, is knowing what the last time, if ever, there's been not a study committee report. I know that we've had a lot of those on various issues that do blend into some very significant political matters, but I'm talking about a humble petition. What do you think, Jim? Can you recall anything specific?
Yeah, I do. I think we ended up addressing, No, I'm trying to remember what the issue was. I think there was a humble petition being proposed to the OPGA. I believe it was when we were at Kuiper College in
Yeah.
Grand Rapids, and I don't remember the year off the top of my head.
2013. That's the one I was remembering. I was there. We debated
Okay.
another one regarding some COVID things, or the
Yeah.
fallout of it. But I'm wondering about things that have passed, not things that have been debated.
Yeah. No, well, yeah, right.
Right.
And I don't I'll, the reason why I brought it up is because it was debated and it wasn't passed, and
Right.
it had something to do with homosexuals serving in the military. And so yeah, we tend to be hesitant to go ahead and make those kind of public statements on cultural, political issues. I think that with regard to this one, with a great deal of confidence, echoing what you said, Camden, our ministers and elders would be agreed on the, nobody wants to give in the OPC that I know of would want to give kids drugs to change their gender.
Yeah, that's
On
horrific.
the other hand, I think that we would say something along the lines of, hey, the government didn't ask us our opinion on this. Imposing it upon the government may not be exactly within the purview of the call of the church, and then would point to our confessional standards, particularly larger catechism, the larger catechism on its exposition of the law, and say, this is the kind of thing that is, while giving shots to children, is not expressly stated within our confessional standards. There are things within our confessional standards that make it very clear that the application of the law to this thing would be, quite clear. So it's not like the church is silent. I mean, our confessional standards are public documents, and we declare before the world and for all the world to see what exactly it is we believe about these matters. So
Yeah.
I think, that for those reasons, the OPGA has been, in my opinion, rightly hesitant to, crusade on particular cultural or political issues.
Yeah. And again, there'd be differences of opinion. I appreciate you sharing that, Jim. Ryan and I have, at times have had some good conversations at some local establishments on these kinds of issues, how we deal with culture, what's the church's role, how we handle all those things. Ryan, do you recall? I remember one time we had been going on and on for a couple hours. You and I being good friends, but getting kind of loud one time. And then we were at a pub, and around the corner from the bar, finally one guy just slams his fist down. He goes, "That's it, that's it." And we thought he was going to scold us and chew us out for arguing about theological things, but he goes, "That's it. I'm a Christian and I go to church and I don't know what in the world you guys are talking about."
Yeah, that's right. And so he said, "Hey, come on to Hope OPC." And I think he was
Exactly.
totally scared by that point, and we didn't see the poor
We
brother.
gave him a card, a
Yeah.
URL, all sorts of things. He never showed up. That
Yeah.
was fun. So we can talk vigorously about these things, and really, in many ways, that's kind of what Presbyterian General Assemblies are about, as long as we do so in the spirit of charity, love, brotherly friendship. And then being Presbyterians about this, Brad, you're a good Presbyterian, and part of being a Presbyterian sometimes is losing well, right? And living with it. And if there's something you think was done incorrectly, there are ways to complain, there are ways to protest, but it's very hard when we're on the losing end. But sometimes being a good churchman, being a true Presbyterian, has a lot to do with how we compose ourselves and still support the body when the body decided to do the opposite of what you wanted it to do.
Yeah, I mean, there's a different direction in the PCA now than there was 7, 8, 10 years ago. My first General Assembly was in 2010, and it didn't seem like, it had a totally different feel. I think we're moving in a good, strong direction, better than in a long time. But I think on this issue, I told you I opposed a similar thing on political violence last year, sort of a jam. But I opposed it because it was obvious to me And it came out of the DC area, that it was had a lot to do with January 6th.
Yeah.
It was necessarily political. It had political in the title, political violence. This issue with, you know, gender, whatever, reassignment or treatment or whatever for, it's hard to talk about, you know, that it doesn't make any sense. So trying to, and I was telling somebody, and it says trans man, put the word fake in for trans. Because, you know, it was the trans man originally a man or a woman?
I know,
it,
with the terrible shooting in Tennessee, off. I was confused as to the details of even that, because the reporting, even just reading it 10 times, you still don't know what they mean. It's nonsense.
So just use the word fake when you see trans. That's my, my very charitable opinion on that. But this is not a necessarily political issue. I mean, it's been forced on us. It's been made political. It's become a political issue, but nobody asked for this. So I think because it's creation level, and right out of the garden, I think it's reasonable probably to do this. And I think, I was teaching on, and it is Westminster Confession chapter 31. Yeah, I've taught on 25 and maybe 29 and 31 in the last few months in a series that we've had in church. And, so I'm getting them all confused. But when I told our, adult Sunday school class about this, I mean, the heads were nodding, people were reacting, because sometimes they think, you all are completely separated from the world and you're just, you're geeky Presbyterians, but, who knows, this may go down in defeat, but I think it might well pass. And I think it's not unreasonable, and we don't want to become, position papering, fanatics like the mainline church has been for a long time. PCUS was coming out with a, just like the PCUSA in the 60s, statements about the war and economy and taxation and welfare. We're not going there. This is an unusual and extraordinary matter, I think.
Yeah, I could see that. No, much appreciated. We'll keep that in prayer, and may the Lord's righteousness be demonstrated and continue to spread throughout the world. But
I have a question, Camden. That
please
on this topic.
Proceed.
Yes.
Chair is so the mic is yours.
Oh,
floor,
thank you, sir.
Floor granted.
yes, Your Honor. The question comes from Westminster Confession, as Brad referenced it, 31:4. And this is a question for the group to discuss. I think it's an interesting question. So let me just read the paragraph real quick. Synods and councils are to handle or conclude nothing but that which is ecclesiastical, and are not to intermeddle with civil affairs which concern the commonwealth, unless by way of humble petition in cases extraordinary, or by way of advice for satisfaction of conscience, if they be thereunto required by the civil magistrate. So the question that I have is on that last clause, if they be thereunto required by the civil magistrate. Does that qualify the entire unless clause, or just the latter half of the unless clause that has
question.
To do with advice and satisfaction of conscience?
That's a great question.
We should ask Chad Van Dixhorn.
We
I might add, is the greatest fraternal delegate ever. He always comes to the PCA. Or appears on video, which we require. It's always entertaining and edifying. Let's ask him.
If there's one person that should earn a spot in the flesh, it's CVD. So you got to give it to him. But yeah, certainly we can ask him. And I took an entire course on the standards with him. I don't remember us spending too much time on that particular question. But what do you guys think? I have my thoughts, but I'm the host here. I'll try to refrain myself until the end. Ryan, you have any thoughts? You've thought about this.
Well, no, it should be a simple grammatical question, I think, based on the colons and the semicolons. And I say it should be simple, admitting that my own command of the English language is failing me at this point.
Your French is better these days.
You guys understand what I'm saying. I think it should be readily discernible,
right?
And insofar as the the civil magistrate, particularly at the time of the Westminster Assembly, could even call synods and councils, I would presume that that last clause would make it such that the civil magistrate could demand or require the church's prophetic voice to speak to a certain issue by making a humble petition. So that's how I would understand that last clause.
Yeah, I think I agree with Ryan there. I think particularly in that context where the state was more interested in speaking to the church really than maybe the state was interested in hearing from the church. So, you know, it's good. There's sort of a qualifier in there that's interesting, right? Which says, listen, don't meddle. If I'm, you know, if I'm speaking on behalf of the civil government, don't meddle in our affairs unless we ask you to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I mean, that's the way I read it. And I, you know, again, I don't know if that's a correct reading. Again, Chad would certainly be the person to go to here to expound on this for us. But the way I read it is, you know, basically, you don't talk about matters civil unless you're asked to do so by the civil magistrate, to aid the civil magistrate in giving an opinion or advice, et cetera, et cetera. And we'll let you know. We'll petition you. Don't come to us. We'll come to you if there's a matter of civil importance that we would like for you to give us advice on. And now, of course, we're living in a post-establishment age, really, in the post-establishment. I know their establishmentarianism is still alive and well in Europe, but functionally, that's not the way that things operate anymore, even over there. But particularly here in this context, we're post-establishment, and so that clause kind of takes on maybe a slightly different nuance in our context than it would, you know, 400 years ago. And the way I read that is, you know, in essence, you know, unless you know, President Biden comes to us and says, hey, you know, I need your advice on something, I think that probably, you know, we point to our confessional standards on this stuff. We know what we believe about it. I would be more inclined towards a study report on some of these ethical issues that maybe there's debate over. There isn't on this particular issue, but if moral issues arise that flow over within the general populace, the general society, general culture, I'm all for the church doing a study report to help us discern the ethical issues where there might be some lack of clarity. But generally speaking, because, you know, it's one of those things where it's kind of like, okay, at what point, to use a good PCA expression, you know, you get on that, what is it? The slippery slide or something?
Slope coat.
The slippery slope. You know, you start kind of talking to cultural issues here, well, then next thing you know, you're talking about cultural, political, ethical issues there. And then what's going to end up happening is the Flora GA will end up getting taken over with people who are leftists in their political ideology, trying to get their particular thing through versus those who are rightist. And then you're going to have a division in the church over politics and culture and sentiments with regard to, you know, left-leaning, right-leaning, et cetera. And I don't think that that's kind of where we want to go as a church.
Guy Clark wrote a very thoughtful piece opposing humble petition on his blog, the Heidel blog, and I would, you know, easily find that.
Yeah.
He sort of wrote it in opposition to some of us in the PCA who think it's, you know, might be a good idea. But I was happy to see it and read it because he was very careful and reasonable, and we'll try and be the same.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to, you know, the church. I think this is a case extraordinary. At the same time, I don't think that every case that's extraordinary requires the church to speak. Just in terms of grammatical, Jim, I side with you in terms of posture, affect, instinct, whatever word we want to use there. Like I tend toward that. You know, certainly that form of expression of a pilgrim mentality. Yet, knowing that the assembly, the standards are written in a very different time, we still subscribe to these standards. And grammatically, at least as I read it, not being an expert on the history of all the formation of these standards and the minutes and therein, all that, I'd be happy to be shown otherwise. But my initial reading of this is that the thereunto required by the civil magistrate seems to qualify what follows the semicolon. So, in other words, the church is synods and councils are to handle or conclude nothing but that which is ecclesiastical. So we've got that principle. But then there are two ways that it might handle something that isn't directly ecclesiastical. One of them is if it is by way of humble petition in cases extraordinary. And the other is if you want to offer advice for the satisfaction of conscience, if asked. You see what I'm saying? I'm not saying I would, you know, that's the way that I might have written it myself. I'm happy to subscribe to this and certainly would happy to be happy to debate these matters. But at least grammatically, that's how I read it. Do you see it differently, though, Jim?
No. I mean, I think in terms of the punctuation,
yeah,
you have the right and proper reading of it, as far as I could tell.
But I still could see people reading it the other way.
It's a question to ask, yeah. And a debated point. I mean, it was an argument that I heard on the floor of GA when we were talking about the gays and military stuff, and they were, arguments were put on the floor that part qualifies the entire unless clause, the exception clause. Others who were saying no, it's just the latter clause. So,
right.
Throwing it out there for
this
for
is nothing
discussion.
New.
But I see what you're saying, and I think that your argument, in terms of just the punctuation, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, but that doesn't lead me to a different conclusion than you. This is where we debate things and seek the Lord's wisdom, and there's wisdom mm-hmm. in a multitude of counselors. So fun.
We've gone mm-hmm. full Presbyterian here because we're talking about punctuation.
Now we really need to get into
it. In our eyes.
We really need to get into the nerddom by finding some typesetter expert, an expert in 17th century typography that will tell us about the history of the semicolon and whether and what kind of semicolon this was used in the printing of the original version of the standards, what force it has, and whether this really is a semicolon or if it was some sort of smudge or ink blot that was a mistake. So, this is something we really need to deal with. Ryan, I got to get our copy of the minutes off the wall, off the shelf.
We got to put those to use.
You got to dig into
such a great gift.
31.4 and see if there's some background on semicolons.
Sure. I will say I've benefited over the years from the Jerusalem Chamber podcast from our RP brothers, and they pay very close attention to all these matters of grammar in
and
their,
even we forgot to even mention the
confession.
We forgot
so I,
to
I'll have to review their episode.
Good point. And we forgot to even mention American revisions too. So I could it have been that a semicolon snuck in? Who knows?
I want to do a show on the American revisions.
Yeah.
And because, our ARP brothers, RPCNA, they don't have the same confession in every respect that we do.
Yeah.
But in looking into this, I confirmed with a PCA historian and then by finding the right copy of each, the OPC and the PCA have exactly the same confession. And I think you all put it together and we just adopted it.
You're welcome.
They are exactly the same.
Go ahead.
Well, you need to address
the website.
You need to address the moderator, Jim. But Mr. Isbell had the floor. So Continue, Brad. Finish your thought, please.
I was just saying that confirmed, because I wondered if in every respect our confessions are identical, the OPC and the PCA.
Right.
And in fact, they are. And I do love the OPC website for very quickly being able to pull up the text.
I know. I use it all the time. I was using it this morning talking to a URC brother, talking about the different installations that ministers have and all those weirdnesses that we have, which actually proved to be quite helpful in edge cases. So who knows? We could be of some help even to our continental brothers. Apologize to the people that are watching online. I'm working on some, looks like I've got a refresh error with the video, but I'm going to get this working here in just a second. Jim, are you seeking the floor?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
You're welcome.
Your Honor, Brother Brad, I'm so sorry for interrupting you. I thought you were done with your thought, and I
let me translate for you, Brad, so you understand my brother from Jersey here. He said, "Brad, I'm sorry. I apologize for interrupting you. It turns out I wasn't listening to anything you were saying because I had my own thoughts that I wanted to share them first."
In New Jersey, we have ways of handling.
Forget
like
about
that,
it. Yeah, I tease. Yeah. Go ahead, bud.
So here's something interesting. And by the way, I'm leaning towards there was a blot, and that's why the semicolon got in there. So that's there's got to be a manuscript.
Is this like a Zapruder? The Zapruder film? Is this there was a second spitter argument? I think. The blot semicolon. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's it. There was a drippy feathered pen or something going on. But there is, interestingly enough, if you compare the older original, was it 1646 version? Oh, you can't see it. It's blurred. But anyway, and then ours, there is a comma that is inserted by the OPC and the PCA after that semicolon, after the or, and that's that colon or that comma, sorry, that comma after the or is not there in the original 1646, which basically amounts to absolutely nothing.
It does point to the fact that at least those two printings, you're looking at one that was printed by Banner. Is that the edition that you had? I see mine on the shelf. Mm-hmm. I'm going to grab that in a second.
Oh, no, it's Free Presbyterian Press.
I'll look at the one I've got over there from the banner. But it's interesting to know that some punctuation might change. My goodness, are we on the, you're like a bloodhound. You just caught a whiff of something. You're on it.
The Irish bloodhound. Here I am.
So what do we do? What about this? Any final comments for the time being? Brad wants to follow up with an episode of PresbyCast on the American revisions, which I think would be phenomenal. Let me know when you're going to do that. I want to tune in live for that one. And, other goings-on of the PCAGA and OPCGA. Brad, what else is on the docket? Anything specific that we need to know about? Any other movements or anything that are coming to the fore? Or is it just going to be 50th anniversary barbecue celebration and everyone head over to B.B. King's and Graceland?
Well, I think I don't think there are a whole lot of events at the assembly that celebrate. No, I'm sure they'll do something. But again, we've got our event on Wednesday night, and the competing event is a sort of an Indelible Grace concert.
Sure.
Somewhere.
I saw an ad for the GRN luncheon, but that's certainly not going to overlap with what you're doing. And if people are listening to this, they might already be sold out.
Yeah, and I won't be at that because we do have a fraternal delegates luncheon. So that is at the same time, midday on Wednesday. So no, it could be a very contentious assembly, or it could be very anodyne. I just don't know what to expect.
Yeah,
you never know. We've never had a 50th anniversary before. Don't know if that'll bring out a different mix of people. I just don't know.
I'm looking forward to it. I pray for a wonderful time. And even when we have I'm not speaking as someone participating in this assembly, making any decisions, but even as brothers have disagreements in the Lord, you pray for for peace, and that we can see how the Lord might work in and through that to provide for his for good for his people, and to accomplish his purposes even in the midst of an assembly. So, Brad, I don't know if you've got any other I'm still wanting to get some T-shirts made, because you had one of the greatest lines ever at the last General Assembly, where you said Acts 14 plus Acts 15 does not equal Acts 29, which is genius. But the point being, you're talking about Presbyterian principles in Acts 14 and 15. And so we just pray and hope that for all Presbyterian and Reformed bodies, we have a recovery of those principles and always seek to do our work according to them, because we believe they're there in Scripture. It's not just pious advice or pragmatic solutions to problems, but certainly something we think that God has prescribed. Maybe not in every single detail that we have in our books of church order, but certainly the Presbyterian principles are biblical.
It's interesting. I think if the assembly was a few months later, we might have ended up with some overtures on gun violence, believe it or not. That's a big issue that some people are talking about. You know, there was it was a large PCA church there in Nashville that was the victim, their school, the victim of that attack by the transgender shooter. In fact, the senior pastor's daughter was killed.
I know.
It was horrific.
Yes.
And anytime something like that happens, there's a lot of talk about guns and what to do about it. And there's a variety of opinions in the PCA. So there's nothing on the docket about that, but there may well be next year.
Mm-hmm.
And like every political issue, you know, one reason to sort of avoid them, it's going to be contentious, and there'll be at least two sides.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there might be people next year who want to make a humble petition on gun violence. And I see that, you know, you don't want to go down the road of speaking to everything, but I also believe all issues are not the same, obviously.
Yeah. Well, we want to thank you for your time today, Brad. It's been really tremendous to have you. Ryan, Jim, it's always a pleasure. I'll see you in a few seconds, Ryan, as I turn the corner out of this room. But at that time, I'm going to go run with my son. He's doing a little running club event and asked if I'd run with him. So he's getting sponsored a dollar a lap? These aren't very long laps. But my wife was saying, I run about five times a week. So my wife is worried that this is going to cost his sponsors a lot more money if my son is more motivated to run. But that means I got to get out and get moving. But it's been tremendous talking with you, brothers. And I would definitely want to point people over to PresbyCast. If you don't know about PresbyCast, where have you been? You got to subscribe. You got to get in and listen. They do all sorts of fun stuff. And the Twitter is tremendous. But first, head over to PresbyCast, PresbyCast.libsyn.com, LIBSYN.com. You can subscribe to the podcast there. You can find the PresbyCast Twitter at PresbyCast on Twitter. But you can also find Resby and Chortles on Twitter, and a whole army. I tell you what, the PresbyCast listeners make my Twitter experience just pure joy. You do get the weird stuff. I know I got a lot of weird stuff in Twitter, but I overall have a very positive view of Twitter, mostly because of the PresbyCast crew.
They're a strange lot. There's no weird, you know. I think maybe one other little expression I came up with is there's no weird like Reformed weird.
Or Doya weird.
Twitter, yeah.
Doya's weird.
that's a deep cut right there. But anyway, this has been great.
He's in the frame too. I got him right on the right there in the under the V-ray.
That is Doya weird. Yeah, we're heading over to reformedforum.org. Of course, as I always say, you'll find much more information about our podcasts, about our courses, about our events, and subscribe for the conference, register, I mean, for the conference here. It's going to be at Hope OPC in Grays Lake, October 6th and 7th. There's going to be a pre-conference event here at the office, but the space is very limited for that because we don't have a ton of space here. There's going to be a panel discussion with the faculty. We're going to be talking about Machen and the enduring influence and significance of Christianity and liberalism. October 6th, the Friday night, October 7th, Saturday, 4 plenary addresses on Machen's CNL, including a talk by Daryl Hart. So you can register at reformedforum.org/conference for that. We'd love to see you. We're going to have a great time. We always love following up. If you've got any questions or comments, send them over to mail@reformedforum.org, or you can tweet us at reformedforum. We want to thank everybody for listening. We hope you join us again next time on Christ the Center.